our lesson in the fourth chapter, but before we turn to that, I want to read again verses 13 to 15. I just went over that very briefly last time, last Sunday morning. Because really, this, what he has to say really begins in verse 13. I mean his judgment, God's judgment upon the people. Now, in this first part, he's dealing here with the wealthy and the ruling class there. Hear ye and testify against the house of Jacob, saith the Lord Jehovah, the God of hosts. For in the day that I shall visit the transgressions of Israel upon him, I will also visit the altars of Bethel, and rather it's a religious, it's a judgment against that religion. The Bethel and the horns of the altar shall be cut off and fall to the ground. And I will smite the winter house with the summer house, and the houses of ivory shall perish, and the great houses shall have an end, saith Jehovah. Now notice that ye is plural. And when he said, hear ye, who is he addressing? Who is he calling upon to hear? I think you go back to verse 9. That's why I wanted to redo this, because I didn't mention that last time. Publish ye in the palaces of Ashdod, and in the palaces in the land of Egypt, and say, assemble yourselves upon the mountains of Samaria, and behold what great tumults are therein, and what oppressions in the midst thereof. And there he calls upon these two heathen nations, Ashdod and Egypt, to observe now the conditions in Samaria, in Israel. Now look at it. Now up here he's calling upon them to observe the judgment. One is behold the tumults, now behold the judgments. Now these heathen nations, God's going to let them know that he doesn't make any distinction between his people and the heathen when it comes to sin and judgment. That if his people sin, he's going to destroy them, judge them just like he does the heathen people. That's still true. That's still a principle of God today. We need to realize. Right? So when he called upon them, hear ye and testify against the house of Jacob, saith the Lord Jehovah. Right? Now Bethel was 12 miles north of Jerusalem, and this is where Amos was when he prophesied. Now remember that Bethel had been made a headquarters for Jeroboam, the religion of Jeroboam the first. When the kingdom divided and Jeroboam the first was king over Israel, Rehoboam was king over Judah. Jeroboam said if the people go back to Jerusalem, they ought to go back to one another. And so he set up an altar at Bethel and another at Dan, way to the north of that, about 6 to 7 miles to the north of that. Set up a golden calf at each place. So this became a snare unto them. So God says now that I'm going to destroy the altar in this judgment. I'll destroy the source of their apostasy, which was their false religion. Remember always, the apostasy of a nation or destruction begins with its religious apostasy. That's to be followed by moral, social, and political corruption. That always follows the religious rejection of God. And that's what's happened in our own country. So you'll be able to see why a judgment's going to come, because the nation is rejecting God. And just a very few left, and there are enough left to be the salt of the earth. All right, but then not only that, we're going to destroy the luxury. Here they're luxury, they're giving themselves over to luxury. That is, a summer house, a winter house, and a house with ivory inlay, or ivory inlaid furniture. Very expensive, very fine. And so God's going to judge that. Now he turns from his judgment of Bethel and their extravagant, luxurious life to the women of Samaria. This next one. Hear this word, ye kine of Bashan. That is, ye fat cows of Bashan that are in the mountain of Samaria, that oppress the poor, that crush the needy, that say in their to their lords, bring, and let us drink. But the Lord Jehovah has sworn by his holiness, that lo, the days come, shall come upon you, that they shall take you away with hooks, and your residue with fish hooks. And you shall go out at the breaches, everyone straight before her, and you shall cast yourself into Harmon, saith Jehovah. Now Bashan was this land just south here. Here's where the red galvanized down here. Right, now as you come on down over here like this. Now here was the land of Bashan in here. That was the fine grazing section of Palestine. Now this country down through here, where they had the fine grapes and grain and all that. But the good grazing country was over here. So here's Samaria now. He called the women of Samaria, you fat cattle of Bashan. That is, like the cattle of Bashan that were fat had the finest of everything, grazing. So you have also gotten fat on the luxuries here in Samaria. But notice now what he charges them with. Now these women here oppress the poor, crush the needy, and say unto their lords, bring and let us drink. In other words, they were oppressing the poor people, taking away what they had, that they might, and bring that, they said to our lord, their husbands, bring that we may drink. Otherwise, their concern was their cocktail parties, or their drinking parties. So that gives you an idea. Here were the fine, luxurious homes. Here now was a luxurious life, profligate life, that these voluptuous women were living. And so God now is going to judge them. Now notice what the judgment would be. The Lord Jehovah has sworn by his holiness. When God could swear by none greater, he swears by himself. And that's always true. God could swear by none greater. So when he takes an oath, it's always by himself as to what he's going to do. So he swears by his own holiness, which he cannot and will not deny. So you're not denying that. Not go back on it. Right? That lo, the day shall come upon you, that they shall take you away with hooks, and your residue with fish hooks. In other words, when they come in and take Samaria, they'll put their hooks in your, either around your neck, or maybe in your lips, or maybe in your garment, and they'll lead you away. Will lead you into captivity. So this is a warning, a final warning from God. And you shall go out at the breaches, that is, the breaks in the walls of your houses, or the walls of the cities, and you go out through these broken walls on your way through the breaches of the city. And everyone straight before her, everyone leading another one, they're going, and you shall cast yourselves into Harmon, said Jehovah. Nobody knows where Harmon was. Hadn't yet been discovered any place, whether it was a place or whether it was a saying that they had people went into captivity is uncertain. Uncertain what that is. All right. So now, first of all, you're going to judge them for the fine, luxurious homes and for their false religion. That's up in verse 13 to 15. Now you turn to the women of Samaria, and you're going to judge them because all they were interested in was the cocktail parties and their wealth and all of that. Crush the needy. Take it away from them. Bring that we may drink. That's the way they felt about it. All right. So now he says, now calls upon them. He turns now back to the place of worship up here at Bethel again. Come to Bethel and transgress, to Gilgal and multiply transgression. Now remember that Gilgal, when they crossed over, when the Jews came into the land here, had to come around here, talk this way, came in here. Here was Gilgal about here. Here is Bethel, just a little bit further. Here is Bethel. Here's Gilgal. Gilgal is where the Jews, the males, were circumcised after having not been circumcised during the 40 years wilderness trip. This was called rolling back the reproach. That's what the word Gilgal meant, to roll back. Roll back the reproach that had come upon them because of what they had not done. Now then, here come to Gilgal, in other words, the reproach now, they're rolling back upon Gilgal. There's a play on words there, play on ideas there. To roll back in the circumcision, to roll, now they roll back the reproach upon this city. Now Gilgal had become, along with Bethel, an idolatrous city, headquarters for idolatry. And also here's Beersheba. Beersheba was located down about here. Now Beersheba also had become, here's Gilgal here, and here is Bethel here, and here's Samaria up here. Right? Now, Beersheba had also become a city of idolatry. Now, notice what he says now. And to Gilgal and multiply transgression, and bring your sacrifices every morning, and your tithes every 3 days. Now, that's something God never authorized back in the Old Testament, that the tithe was brought in once a year. But they are, well, the point here is whether they actually literally did that, or whether it's to emphasize the fact that they were giving themselves over to religion, all right, but it was not a religion that God had authorized or pleased God. It was a false religion. Now notice further, Bring your tithes. Now this is in sarcasm or irony. Amos speaks in irony every once in a while. And this is one of his ironical statements. Yeah, come to Gilgal. Worship there. Bring your tithes every 3 days. Offer your burnt offerings and your sacrifices. Now notice, brother. And your tithes every 3 days. And offer a sacrifice of thanksgiving of that which is leaven. Now no leaven was ever to be burned in a sacrifice to Jehovah. They brought leavened cakes, all right, but they were eaten by the priests. They were not offered as sacrifices. Right, but now here they were offering that which God had not authorized. Bring leaven and proclaim free will offerings and publish them. But they were actually not free will. They were forced upon them. Their self-will worship. Now notice, brother, for this pleaseth you, O ye children of Israel, saith the Lord Jehovah. So the whole system of religion was a religion that developed in their own minds that pleased them and not Jehovah. Well, I think that's always been true of so much of religion. I think so much of religion of today is to please people. Preachers today are emphasizing the fact of making people feel good. Make them happy. Make them, when they come, lift their spirits, make them feel good. Well, if the Word of God will make a fellow feel good, that's wonderful. But if the individual living in sin, like Micah says, I'm full of the Spirit of Jehovah that came to declare unto Israel his transgression and unto Judah his sins. Right? So here when people sin, then the true preacher, the true prophet, not going to try to make them feel good. He's going to try to make them feel miserable in their sins that they might repent. Now, I don't mean, Paul said to Timothy, reprove, rebuke, exhort. Now to exhort is to encourage. To reprove and to rebuke is to make one conscious of his sins before God. So the idea of making people happy and go away and making them laugh with your jokes and all that and preaching is absolutely foreign to the will of God. Now that pleases men. That doesn't please God. So when we come together to worship, whom are we trying to please? When I worship, when we come together, or when you worship in your home? Whenever you worship, worship is always what? Always that act of reverence offered unto Jehovah. Which I'm trying to please God. I'm pleased when I please God, but I'm not trying to please myself, but to please Him in our worship. This is the thing I tried to emphasize in those sermons on worship a few months ago. All right. And this pleases you, O house of Israel, saith the Lord Jehovah. Right now. Now comes five judgments that God has sent upon the people of a minor nature, but they are pointing to a real judgment. Now notice what he says. And I also have given you cleanness of teeth. Right? That means I've given you famines. Yeah, then you had these famines that I've sent unto you, but I sent them for a purpose here. For you have been famine, cleanness of teeth. Now notice further, cleanness of teeth in all your cities and want of bread in all your places. Yet have you not returned unto me, saith Jehovah. Right? And also I also have withholden the rain. Right? Now here then I've sent you famine and I've sent you drought. And that didn't do any good. Here you wandered out a couple of cities would wander into another city, but notice here. I sent you drought. Well, let me start over here. And I withheld the rain from you. Yet, when if I were yet 3 months to the harvest, well, that would have been early in the spring. The spring rains came in February and March. All right, then the crops matured about June, about the last May, the 1st of June. So here would be 3 months before. Now, the crop depended on that spring rain. Here were the early rains, that was in the fall when they planted. Here were the latter rains in the spring. To make the grain grow, and then it dried off, and it matured. Right? Now God said, I withheld the rain in the spring here, and so you wandered into one city, and I called it to rain upon one city, and called it not to rain upon another city. One piece was rained upon, and the piece whereon it rained not withered. So two or three cities wandered into one city to drink water, and were not satisfied. Yet, because there was not enough for everything to go around. Yet, had you not returned unto me, saith Jehovah. Right? So the drought was sent by Jehovah. And it didn't turn the people, they didn't turn back to God. All of these are minor judgments. Just as I've said so many times about the trumpets in Revelation, then the bowls of wrath. The trumpets were minor judgments that warn. The bowl of wrath is when God pours out on a judge of finality. I mean a judgment of finality. A final judgment. All right, now here then with these rains, and I know what's going to come later. I just drought. Now third, I have smitten you with blasting and mildew. All right, now here then, blasting and mildew. The blasting came from blasting and mildew. The blasting came from the east wind. Here were these east winds would come off in the desert here. They would just dry up everything. They called it Sirocco. And these winds that came in dry and hot blasted everything. Then along with that, the mildew was a kind of a fungus that would grow on there, and that would destroy it. In other words, it looked like the grain, but there wasn't any grain in there. It would just dry it up and nothing in there. It turned yellow. There's no grain in the husk there. That's what God said, I sent you the blasting and the mildew. All of that was to try to make you realize you're dependent upon God and turn unto God and seek forgiveness. But God said, I did that, and you didn't pay attention to it either. And notice what happened. Blasting and mildew, the multitude of your gardens and your vineyards, your fig trees and your olive trees, have the palmer worm eat, devour that. They would come, follow along, just blasting mildew. So if one thing didn't destroy it, like you have over in Jonah, or God sent, I mean not Jonah, but Joel, and Joel there. All right, so, but you're paying attention to it. So God's done all to try to save you. Well, I notice, yet have you not returned unto me, saith Jehovah. All right, now notice the next year, pestilence and sword. I have sent among you the pestilence. After the manner of Egypt, your young men have I slain with a sword. All right, now here's the pestilence and the sword. That would be the diseases that would come here, come upon them. Here's the sword, invading forces there. So I mean, I'd bring an army against you and destroy this city or that city. So I'm paying attention to it. Now notice further here. Yet have you not, and your sword, and have carried away your horses, and I have made the stench of your camp to come up even into your nostrils. That is, the horses that were killed and the people killed in battle, I raised a great stench in the camp there. That ought to cause them to look to God, but it didn't. Yet have you not returned unto me, saith Jehovah. I have overthrown cities among you as when God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah, and you were as a brand plucked out of the burning, yet have you not returned unto me, saith Jehovah. Right, now this overthrown cities. Now what was the overthrowing of these cities? I just put that down. That is the overthrow of the cities here. Right? Now whether that was by earthquakes, it might have been. Or it might have been armies that destroyed them. We simply don't know, but there were cities that had been destroyed among them. Now look at that. Here are minor judgments. Here's a judgment, first of all here, of drought, famine and drought, and then come the blasting and mildew, and here's the sword, here's pestilence, and overthrowing of cities. All of that comes upon them. But it doesn't turn to God. I think you can learn several lessons from this. God is in control of the realm of nature. God uses the forces of nature. I think he still does. I don't preach that when the earthquakes and all these things come. I have no way of knowing that God sent them or God didn't send them. I didn't know he did in times gone by. It's his world. He created it. He can control it. We need to remember that. And so these things that have come upon people ought to make them turn to God. And I know a lot of folks don't like that concept of God. God would do a thing like that or send that. But he did. What he's trying to do is to turn people back to him. Make people conscious of that. Now, with those five, now comes the great judgment. Now, notice. Therefore, thus will I do unto thee, O Israel, and because I will do this unto thee, prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. Now, that's not what we call the final judgment out yonder. This is a final judgment upon them. You're going to come to a final judgment here upon them, and that took place when the Assyrians invaded Israel, destroyed Samaria, and carried away the Israelites into Assyrian captivity. Destroyed and slew many of them, carried the rest into captivity. Then they didn't take all of them, left some of the poor ones there. Then they brought back foreigners who settled in this land, who had married with them, and that's where you get your Samaritans of the New Testament. When you come to the Samaritans of the New Testament, why were they different from the Jews? Because they were a mixture of foreigners and Israelites. So here when they were carried away in 722 is when the church came. Now here when they were carried away in the captivity, then others were brought back and settled here in this land. Now these foreigners intermarried with the Israelites. Out of that, in the coming days of Jesus, you have the Samaritans. Now, after these people came in here, when they brought them in here, even just a little before they brought them in, they were animals overcoming them, and so cried out to Jehovah for a priest. And so God gave them a priest here, and his priest taught them the law. So that's where you have the Samaritans believing in God, looking for a Messiah. In John, the 4th chapter, the woman at the well there. So we know when Messiah cometh, he will call Christ, he'll tell us all things. Why do you worship in Jerusalem? We worship in Samaria. You see? And they only accepted the first 5 books of the Old Testament, the Pentateuch. They didn't accept the prophets. They accepted the Pentateuch. And on Mount Gerizim, here was Mount Gerizim up here. On Mount Gerizim, and here was Mount Gerizim and Mount Ebal. On Mount Gerizim, they built their temple. So they had Mount Gerizim, the place they worshiped. So what I'm saying is, this will help us to understand the New Testament here. These Samaritans were part foreigner and part Israelite. And they worshiped God, but not according to God's law and rule there. All right, so now then, here's the judgment. Now notice further. Therefore, thus will I do unto thee. Therefore, prepare to meet thy God, O Israel. For lo, he that formeth the mountains, that's God's omnipotence, his great power, and createth the wind, and his omniscience, his knowledge, and declareth unto man what is his thought. And here's the God that you're dealing with, the God that created the mountains, the God that created the winds, God that understands the thoughts of men. Not only is he all-powerful, he's also all-knowing. He is omnipotent, he is omniscient, and you can say omnipresent. He's everywhere. Whither shall I go from thy spirit, flee from thy presence? If I ascend into heaven, thou art there. If I make my bed in Sheol, behold, thou art there. If I take the wings of the morning and flee to the uttermost parts of the earth, even thou there, thy hand shall lead me, thy right hand shall hold me. No escaping God. God's all-powerful, he's all-knowing, he's all-present, always present. That's what Paul said when he said, the Lord is at hand. Nothing behind, the Lord is at hand. He's always near. He's always at hand. Not from a second coming, talking about the presence of the Lord. Right? Now notice here, that maketh the morning darkness, and treadeth upon the high places of the earth. Jehovah, the God of hosts, is his name. Now notice he doesn't tell you what the judgment is going to be. He doesn't tell him. He just says, you prepare to meet thy God. Now we come to Hosea, our next study, which is either about 25 years or no. From about 5 to 25 years later. He's from about 750 to 725. It'll be about 5 years later. He now declares that Assyria will be the nation that will carry them into captivity. Amos never tells us that. He just says an adversary. He says, I'm going to prepare to meet me in judgment. So the judgment will be of God. All right. There's been lots of sermons preached in that passage on prepare to meet thy God. It's a good text. When I have preached on it in years gone by, when I would preach on it, I would show clearly that he's talking not to us here, he's talking about the Jews. They were going to meet God in a judgment. All right, now, God told us to prepare to meet him, because we too are going to meet God in a final judgment. So that's inevitable. If they face judgment, so will we. Coming. And, but the nation faced it, and this nation might well prepare to meet God, because the judgment's coming to it. I've never preached much on abortion. I haven't said much about it because preached a small group since we've been out here. This abortion is becoming a real terrible thing. Reading last week where something like 1.5 million babies were killed last year by abortion. 1.5 million. The thing that amazes me is this. We've got this ACLU outfit, one of the most atheistic outfits in the country, and why on earth our nation allows it to exist, I don't know, but anyhow, here. This ACLU will cry to high heaven if you put to death. Now, they put this fellow to death here in the state, to do the first one 23 years. You watch the ACLU, going to rise up in holy horror. And yet, they're one of the major advocates for abortion. Kill them before they're born, but don't kill a criminal who's killing other people after he matures there. Can you make sense out of that? Not a lick in the world. I'll lick on there. Right? But now, with 1.5 million babies slain, with criminals turned back loose on the streets here, one after them, time after time after time, to go back and kill somebody else, or rape somebody else and all that, the government is absolutely failing in that for which God ordained it. God ordained civil government for the praise of them that do well and for the punishment of those that do evil. But now, if the nation doesn't do that and the government doesn't, what's going to happen to it? We're going down. Anybody can't see that, just flat has never studied his Bible at all. Now you've got all these movements today, these women movements, and ACLU movement, all those movements of today, advocating abortion, advocating all these things, and the homes going to pop. Some of these programs that are showing here, and that's one thing I got against those three news, ABC and NBC and CBS or the other one, or whatever it is. Those three, all of them are for abortion. Not a one of them will say anything against it, nor deal with a moral issue in that. And you can read Dear Abby and Ann Landers, and they may condemn some things, but they never look at it from the moral point of view, or the social point of view. God looks at the moral point of view. So what I'm trying to say is that as you read these prophets, I want you to see God in action among the nations. God rules among the nations. This is what I was in the Old Testament. It's still true. Jesus Christ now is the Lord of lords and King of kings. He's the ruler of the kings of the earth, says Revelation. He has the rod of iron. He ruled with a rod of iron. He treads the winepress of the wrath of God the Almighty. Jesus Christ now on the throne is doing what God did in times gone by. Drive your pig right there and start watching. And you may be doing it already. I've said enough about it. I hope you haven't. Start watching these things on your television and your news there and see where we're headed. And aren't we following the same steps of those nations of old? I think we are. Well, we don't like to think of it. We like to think, oh, God is big for the American. American doesn't make a big difference in God than the African does, or the Chinaman, or the Japanese, or anybody else. He looks on the heart. Makes a difference whether you're an American or what you are, me or what I am. That doesn't save anybody. That's what Paul taught in that Philippian letter, third chapter there. All right, now we'll move on now. I hear ye this word which I take up for a lamentation over you, O house of Israel. The virgin of Israel is fallen. She shall no more rise. She is cast down upon her land. There is none to raise her up. Now when he calls her the virgin of Israel here, he's not talking about purity and the innocence of the nation. He's talking about the fact that it's never been cast down. A virgin, and it's never been humbled, never been cast down, never been raped, as you'd put it in modern language. Right? But now when God casts them down, no more shall they rise. She is cast down upon her land, people are, as none to raise her up. If God's not there to raise her up, who's going to raise her up? Nobody. Nobody can. Only God does it. Remember what Paul said in Acts 17, that God made of one every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth, having determined their appointed seasons and the bounds of their habitation. We're talking about, nations. All the nations are. What did he do? He determines the bounds of the habitation. He determines also the time of their endurance. All that determined by God. And so if the rest remember that, then that puts God in the center of the universe. All things are under his control. Now then, through Jesus Christ. Well, that's an interesting point. Right? For thus saith the Lord Jehovah, the city that went forth 1,000 shall have 100 left, and that which went forth 100 shall have 10 left to the house of Israel. In other words, I'm going to destroy you down to just a small remnant. That's all that means. Not just literally 100 to 1,000 or 1,000 to 100, but I'm going to reduce you here to a mere minimum, just a remnant. For thus saith Jehovah unto the house of Israel, seek ye me, and ye shall live. But it's not too late. Still wasn't too late. He sent these five different judgments here, and he felt that there's an adversary coming, but it isn't too late. Seek ye me, says Jehovah. Underscore that. And ye shall live. But seek not Bethel, that's the headquarters of your idols, nor enter into Gilgal, that was others, and pass not to Beersheba. That's what we were saying a while ago here. Here then, here at Bethel, here at Gilgal, here at Beersheba, the headquarters of idol worship. Don't go down to try to find your help. Seek me. Right? Same thing today concerning Washington. That's don't go to send our congressman try to get help. Talk to God about it. To cast anxiety on God. Don't shoot all that to write your cards in and all that. They won't pay attention to it. Like that NEA business, that National Endowment for the Arts there, all the stuff that they're supporting there. It burns me up every time I read that. I pay taxes to go into that kind of thing. Sure does you too. All right, seek ye Jehovah. All right, we don't go to Bethel. Now here, verse 6 again, he says, seek Jehovah, and ye shall live, lest he break out like fire in the house of Joseph. And that Joseph, that's Ephraim and Manasseh, the sons of Joseph. Ephraim, he calls this Joseph because Ephraim was his son. He was the chief ruler there. And he'd devour, and there'd be none to quench it in Bethel. You who turn justice to wormwood, cast down righteousness to the earth. Now, wormwood, we're phrase for any bitter plant. You're kind of a real bitter plant there. And so you've turned justice into bitterness, into wormwood, into bitter decision there, the wrong decision. And you've cast down righteousness to the earth. When you have justice and righteousness, you've rejected the just judgment of a person, and righteousness toward an individual. Well, you rejected all that. Turn into wormwood and cast it down to the earth. How long can a nation last that does that? What have we done? I think it only looks to me like, I don't know if it's true. I don't know much about what I'm saying say now. But it seems to me that the only people today that the law is fixed for the criminal, that the fellow gets by the criminal, then we got a righteous cause there, Teddy. They seldom get justice in the court. There may be more justice than I think for. But people that look to me like ought to be hanged or put in an electric chair, turned loose. Here's some fellow, a little minor crime there. Now, none of them may be minor, but he gets the limit there. All depends on how much money you got, and your folks have got, how much influence you got with the judge and the lawyers and those fellows. And that's what he's talking about here. Now, seek him. That's God again. Seek him that maketh the Pleiades and Orion. Now those are two clusters of stars, planets. And turneth the shadow of death into the morning, and maketh the day dark with night, calleth for the waters of the sea, and poureth them out upon the face of the earth. Jehovah is his name. Now let's look at that a moment. Now here these are the creator of the great heavenly bodies there. And he created those. Turn to him. And he turned the shadow of death into morning. Now here you're in the shadow of death. Your sins are upon you. You're actually in the very shadow of destruction. He can turn that into morning. I think we're in the shadow of destruction. I think we're in the shadow of it. It may be economic, it may be something else, but we're in the shadow of it. He can turn that into morning. How? By our turn to righteousness, seeking him, turning back to him in the ways that are right. God can turn the night here into morning and make it the day dark with night, or he can take the day and make the day dark. He can do both of them. God created so he can make the day dark for you, or he can take your dark night and turn it into day, whichever, all depends on what you do toward him. We need Amos' preaching today in this country very badly. I don't know when will you go to get anybody to listen to you. That calleth for the waters of the sea and poureth them out upon the face of the earth. He controls that. Jehovah is his name. Now that bringeth sudden destruction upon the strong, so that destruction cometh upon the fortress. All right, so God then can turn the night into day, turn the day back into night. He can call the strongest of the fortresses to be destroyed. He can destroy our atomic energy and our atomic bombs and our great military and all that. God can do all that. Well, let's recognize him as God and serve him is the point here. Turn to it. Well, I move a little further. Now he's talking now about the political corruption. Look at it. Those are the politicians. They hate him that reproveth in the gate, and they abhor him that speaketh uprightly. Now your political rulers, your judges and all, you don't want anybody out here in the gate that preaches righteousness and all that. They don't want that kind of a man. Forasmuch therefore as you trample upon the poor and take exactions from him of wheat, you have built houses of hewn stone, but you shall not dwell in them. You have planted pleasant vineyards, you shall not drink the wine thereof. You don't want a ruler that will really get in there and clean things up. I don't know which ones you're impressed with. I'm not particularly impressed with any of the politicians. That fellow down in Texas, that Perot, and that his name, Ross Perot. What I've heard from him and about him impresses me more than I don't know whether Democrat or Republican. I think he's just an American. I believe he's a man that would go in and try to do something. What can he do with his Congress? Nothing. But neither who wants him? Who will? All of these people on welfare would be against him. All the abortionists would be against him. All the politicians that are writing the rubber checks they'd be against him. All the folks here that got a hand in the cookie jar in Washington, they'd be against him. God ain't got a chance on earth. I don't believe that we've got a Chinaman's chance of, I know we'll say now, maybe better, never be better. I don't think we've got any more chance of getting a good man in our presidency that can get something done than you have of serving fried snowballs for breakfast. Eat a fried snowball, we got just as much chance of putting a good man up there and getting something done than you have of serving fried snowballs in the morning for breakfast. A good poor chance, isn't it? Still vote if you want to, but let's vote for less of two evils. You can figure out which one that is and stand him. But I just don't think we've got a chance. I think we're saying line like this. No, they don't want a man like that. They don't want a man like that. But now God said, now look what God's going to do. Here then, for as much as you trample upon the poor and take exactions from him of wheat of the poor, you have built houses of hewn stone, but ye shall not dwell in them. You have planted pleasant vineyards, but you shall not drink the wine thereof. Now, what's been done for the poor in this country by the government, I don't think it's the government's responsibility, but they've been doing it. All that is with somebody else's money. They borrow the money, and nobody doesn't take it out of anybody's pocket particularly. So my mind asked, well, what are you griping about? It hasn't come out of your pocket. I know it hasn't. It hasn't come out of anybody's pocket. We're just putting in red ink. We cover that with red ink, that's all. Who's going to pay for that? Our children, grandchildren, when they have a collapse. And then we're starting over again. We'll start over with a dictatorship of some kind, military rule. For I know how manifold are your transgressions, how mighty are your sins. I know God said, I know that. I know the thoughts of your heart. I know what you're doing. Let me get through here. Ye that afflict the just, that take a bribe, and that turn aside the needy in the gate from his right. Therefore, he that is prudent shall keep silence in such a time, for it's an evil time. Man, that's, most people just keep silent, don't say anything. Amos says, God called me, God gave me a message, I can't keep quiet. Prudent man will just keep his mouth shut, because you know he's not going to get anywhere with it, or they'll turn against him, or they'll do something to him. The more you cry out against anything of this nature, the more unpopular you become. Amos says, I've got a message, I've got a responsibility God gave to me, and so he's going to cry out, he's going to keep on doing it. But a prudent man will keep quiet. Now one last thought here. Therefore, he keeps silence at such a time. It's an evil time. Now then, seek good. Now here comes the exhortation. Seek good and not evil that you may live. And so Jehovah, the God of hosts, will be with you as you say. Hate the evil and love the good and establish justice in the gate. It may be that Jehovah, the God of hosts, will be gracious unto the remnant of Joseph as his cry. Now he comes, I guess I better stop there. But at any rate, I'll read one more verse. Therefore thus saith Jehovah, the God of hosts, the Lord, Lord, wailing shall be in all the broad ways, and they shall say in all the streets, alas, alas. And they shall call the husbandmen to mourning, and such as are skillful in lamentation to wailing. And in all vineyards shall be wailing, for I will pass through the midst of thee, saith Jehovah. I remember back in Egypt, he said, I'll pass over you. This time I'll pass through you. When I pass through you, it'll be nothing but wailing, crying out, and all of that.